So the first question is, how do you remember Sandy?
The way I think of, and I'm going to have to say Mr. Meisner, because to me, you know, that's what he was from day one that I met him, through my years at school here, and any other time that I saw him subsequent to that. I just remember him as this regal, aristocratic presence. He just had that kind of bearing about him. Now, we use the word charisma, and I think it's probably overused to some extent, particularly in this day and age, but and there are different types of people with different types of charisma. But from my point of view, he had it not because he was a movie star or a political figure that you just saw and associated that person with that fame, but because of the way he was and what he just projected as a person. He could have walked down the street, been anything, an insurance salesman, and he would have still projected the same bearing, regality, and charisma. That's what I think.
Sandy has been described, everybody is an especially talented and great teacher, but a difficult man as a person. Do you agree with him?
Well, I would say difficult from the point of view that he was hard to please. Now, I guess it needs to be put, from my point of view, in context, and probably from a lot of people's point of view, but when I went to school here, I was young. So to have this person going back to having this reputation, this track record, this presence, this bearing, and he basically wanted things the way that he wanted them, and there didn't seem to be much latitude, or he didn't give you a whole lot of room to do anything other than the way he wanted it. So from that point of view, yeah, difficult man, yes.
When were you a student?
I was a student here from 1970 through 1972.
What were some of the people?
Well, I certainly remember a good number of them, and their names and fond memories of them. Perhaps not many that would be terribly well known today from theater or film. Good friends of mine, Gerard Bisset, Cliff Batuello, Tom Caron, who we spoke about before the interview, who stayed for the first year. Christine Avila, now a person, Denise Gaelic, who has had a pretty nice career over the years, Eileen Meltzer, now not in my section, but in second year we were together. Jeff Goldblum was in my class, so we had a pretty good pretty good group.
In the first year, was Sandy taught a different thing in the first year, as opposed to the second year? Was there a big difference?
Oh, big difference, definitely. I mean, the first year you're starting off, and I didn't have any theatrical background or training, had never really been in anything. So in a way, that probably ended up being an advantage for me. But we started off with the famous, well-known repeat exercise, blue shirt, that whole thing. And certainly I had no idea, and I think nobody had any idea where we were going with that or what the purpose of it was. But here you do that and you don't even pick up a script or a scene for months and months. And then in the second year, you're starting again with the improvisation, however, at a more advanced level. You go into your scenes and now suddenly you're doing Shakespeare and Commedia dell'arte. And a big change.
Was there a fear of not being called back?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because again, at that age and where you were, irrespective of the many good reasons there are for the administration and the faculty here to ask people back or not ask them back, the only thing you think of is, if I'm not asked back, it's because I'm not talented. That's just the way you look at it, and I have to say to you, Bob, I can remember the day that I got that letter in the mail. It was a Saturday morning in, June, and I saw the Neighborhood Playhouse envelope. My hands were shaking. I opened that letter and saw it, a short, few paragraph letter, and just started to literally jump around the house. I was so excited.
Did Sandy sign it, or did it come?
Oh boy, you know what? I don't remember. I'm going to guess though that it was probably Paul Morrison.
Paul.
That's what I'm going to guess. Who was a wonderful man.
I knew him since I was 9 and loved him.
I feel the same way about
him. Were you in awe of Sandy? Did you feel him?
Absolutely. Absolutely awestruck. And again, part of that probably goes to the fact of my age, the fact that I didn't have much background, but knew of him, his reputation, what he produced in terms of successful, talented actors and actresses in the theater and on film. And all you have to do, going back to one of the previous questions, is meet him once. And I would think it's hard not to be in awe of him, particularly now putting it in the setting where he's your teacher. And to the extent that you really want to be here, and everybody does, and everybody wants to come back for second year, and everybody wants to learn to become a great actor, and you have this passion in you, I mean, he basically at that time, he held your fate in his hands, is the way you felt about it.
How old are you? When you went to the neighborhood?
When I went to the Neighborhood Playhouse, I was in my early 20s. I was in 1971, I would have been 22 years old in 1970.
Did you go to college?
I went to college. I went to college at Iona College in New Rochelle.
Yes.
Graduated there. From there, I was graduated in 1969. Went to law school for a year. Decided that that wasn't in my future. And then suddenly told my father one day that, hey, Dad, I want to become an actor. He was not pleased.
No, like my father was, Sandy. What did your father do?
My father, for a number of years, for about 25 years, owned a restaurant down in the financial district.
Oh, I see.
American seafood type steak place called Tom Brown's. Was well known down there, and he spent 25 years there before he sold the restaurant.
I wouldn't mind being your father. Did Sandy show anger in class? Can you remember or specific occasions?
Well, I can't say that I remember a specific occasion, but did he show anger? Yes. And to the extent that I do remember, I think it usually would come from the point of view of his being frustrated with somebody who wasn't doing what he or she was capable of. I don't think that he got angry because he didn't like somebody's work on any given day, but if somebody wasn't doing his or her best or up to where they could be, I think that's what made him angry and frustrated, and he had no reluctance about expressing it.
It's a simple thing to say, acting is being truthful in imaginary circumstances. That's simple.
That's it.
But to find out what the hell it means is not simple.
You have to do it just like, we talked about baseball a little while ago, standing in the batter's box and saying, okay, just hit the curveball.
Yeah, that's right.
Simple to say.
Yeah. Oh, it took me a long time to understand, because I don't know anything about acting. I really don't. I know more now. Was he patient? Especially those students he felt was not quite up to par.
I think he could be patient. Now, one of the things I would say, and this also refers back to the last question, is he just knew what he wanted from people. And I think he could look at somebody and probably tell right away what that person was all about, what he could get from that person, what he would hope that that person would develop into. So sometimes he would be very patient, and other times with other people, he wouldn't be very patient. And I think that's just like, going back, managers in baseball or sports or bosses that you have. You have to know who to pat on the back, and you have to know who to kick in the butt. But he was very good at it, because being as talented as a teacher and an actor as he was, you couldn't tell whether he was acting angry or he was really
angry.
That angry.
So being truthful, I imagine.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Bob, can I call you Bob?
Absolutely.
What impact did Sandy have on you as a person?
Well, I'd certainly say a significant impact from the point of view of here it is, 27 years later, and I still think of him, I still think of the Neighborhood Playhouse. I love to come back here, come back all the time for the productions. I think about, even apart from acting, his ability, his talent to teach acting. I mean, he could have taught anything that he wanted to be involved with, simply because he was so good at what he was doing, And he demanded such perfection and how you needed to be disciplined and follow what he was saying, the whole technique. So I extrapolate from that that in anything that I do, hey, if you really want to be good at it, obviously you have to be perfect at it, and here's the technique you have to use to be good at it. And that's totally apart, as you can hear, from any love of acting or love of the theater or film, so which I always like. But that is what I remember of him, what he gave me.
Could you use any of that stuff in the business you're in now?
Absolutely. It's a good question. I think absolutely. We mentioned acting as living truthfully under imaginary circumstances, and for us that's second nature. So many people think what acting is, you're just making believe you're something you're not. They don't know that, hey, you know what I'm doing? And I've said this to people, Bob, my latest role for 27 years or whatever the hell it is, well not 27, but for the last close to 20 years, I've been acting like a businessman. And that's been my role.
That's a very good answer. I like that. What impact do you think Sammy had on the theater, film, television?
Oh, yeah, certainly a lot. Now, not being one of those, again, who is steeped in theater tradition, I can't talk about that at length. However, what I can talk about, particularly putting it in the context of where everybody was with Mr. Strasberg's technique and the way that Mr. Meisner taught, again, reality. Everything comes out of reality. You have that honesty and the reality, and that affected acting much different in the 60s, 70s, and there beyond, based on Mr. Meisner's technique, from what you would see prior to that. And people who are trained in that technique, and obviously there's still a lot of them around, and there are a lot of teachers who have adapted that, have that down-to-earth, very honest, realistic-based technique.
But did you ever have disputes or arguments with
him? No, there was no way I could have an argument with him. I mean, it wasn't an argument. Whatever he said, that was it. It was over.
Tony Randall had many arguments.
From the point of view that I might be in a position to say, but Mr. Meisner, then all he'd have to do is shoot a glance at me or say something or give a particular expression, and I just zipped up my mouth. I'm not very confrontational, so I wasn't about to go back at him. No way.
This woman I interviewed yesterday told me the story. Her mother gave her a gold ring, an expensive gold ring, which she wore my love. Sandy had a dispute with her in class. She took the gold ring and threw it out the window.
Is that right?
She found it, luckily.
Whoa.
And she was scared stiff of Sandy. You don't remember anything like that ever happening in a class?
Nothing like that, other than, as we discussed a little while ago, his expressing frustration and anger with some of the students' work. I can't remember any incidents where, and yet there were times he would get angry and walk out of a class, but breaking anything or something to that effect, throwing something out a window. I can't remember anything like that.
He never showed a temper in the class.
Not terribly. Again, other than anger with work, but never any terrible temper where after it was all over, you felt that he put himself or somebody else in some kind of physical peril, or he took a belonging and destroyed it. Never that. If anything, he'd just have us destroy ourselves.
I remember once he came home for dinner. We lived in Brooklyn, and came home with a friend. We had dinner. My mother was a good cook. And for some reason, he threw a glass of water at me. I don't know why to this day. Anyhow, what made Sandy's teachings? Why was he so good at teaching?
Why is anybody so good at anything? Part of it is innate talent. I mean, he was born to do that. Beyond that, what he was as a person, going back to his desire to teach perfectly, or to teach students the technique so that they would get it. His work that he did on himself and what he developed into. So I think the combination of the innate ability and the fact that he wanted to be the best at what he was and developed his own technique, his own way of doing things, because hey, he didn't feel that he had to necessarily follow anybody else. He took it and said, hey, I can raise it to another level. And he did.
I think Sandy could look at you and see your skill.
Yeah, Absolutely. Right? Yeah, that's what I kind of was trying to say before. You get a whole class, and you could probably, actually before that, probably in an interview. Mm-hmm.
What made you study with Sandy? How did you come about that?
You know, I had mentioned earlier that I just kind of decided to become an actor. It was something I had thought about for a while, but was a little fearful, because it was a major departure to go to my parents with it. My father wanted me to get into business. I had auditioned at a couple of other schools, American Academy of Dramatic Arts, AMDA, and I had read something in a newspaper about Mr. Meisner and Neighborhood Playhouse, and of course had heard about him before, and read about some of the actors who had studied here, and wrote away for an application, cataloged the whole thing. It was early September, so school was about to start in 3 or 4 weeks, and was told there was a waiting list, but decided, well, why not go in anyhow? Well, I came here and had an interview with Mr. Morrison, and then had an interview with Mr. Meisner, and then after meeting him and being accepted, there was just no question in my mind, this was the place that I was going to come. And no criticism or denigration of the other places, it was just this was where I was comfortable and where I wanted to be.
Parents come down and like final demonstration and so forth?
Oh, in second year, yes, they did.
They accepted the fact that you...
Oh, after it was said and done, where, yes, this is what he's going to do, then I had their support.
Good.
I mean, once, it's funny, going back to the interview a little bit, there are a couple things I remember from it, and Mr. Meisner had asked, well, how are you going to pay for this? I think at the time the tuition was about $1,400 a year. So, kind of hedging a little bit, I said, oh, my father's going to help. And he just looked at me again, knowing exactly what's going on in your mind. He said, oh, your father's going to help? Yeah, he's going to pay.
Okay.
So that was it. And another story that came out of the interview, and this is one that I've told Hal, and I think this very much sums up my recollection, my remembrances of Mr. Meisner. I did ask, having auditioned at the other places, when Mr. Meisner asked, well, do you have any other questions? Mr. Meisner, why don't we audition here? And he just turned and looked at me, actually kind of looked through me, and said, because if you did, none of you would be here.
That's right. That's so true.
And that was it. That was him.
Yeah.
And that was him.
That was so true. So your first interview with Sandy was really... That was it, right?
And that was it. That was it. Spent about 45 minutes with Paul Morrison, about 20 minutes with Mr. Meisner, and that was it. And something I learned years later from Mr. Morrison, and I didn't know how this was done, is that we would come in and talk to him, and then what he would do when he would bring us to Mr. Meisner is he would write down a little note, yes or no, and surreptitiously slip it to Mr. Meisner. And they must have been good at it, because I didn't notice it.
Yes, they probably... I know Paul Morrison.
Wonderful man.
So Harold Baldwin said this. You read it. That Sandy's brilliance was that he could see you do an exercise and immediately in three sentences say, you're wrong, blah, 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 blah. And you would be filled with fear or frustration, but you knew he was right.
Absolutely.
That happened to you?
Absolutely, absolutely. See, one of our things, and I guess this is global for everybody, perhaps whoever went here, is after it's over, and Mr. Meisner would give his critique, it didn't feel good. That's what we would all say. It didn't feel good. And his response would be something to the effect that it doesn't matter whether it feels good, or I'll tell you whether it should have felt good. Mm-hmm. And here's what you did, here's what you didn't do. Or he would just sit there, throw his head back, kind of roll his eyes up a little bit, take a puff from his cigarette. We're hanging, waiting through the silence, and he knows, of course, that we are. And then he would give those one, two, or three sentences, and then after it was over, you would just say, wow. And that was it. That was it.
Remarkable man.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to skip that thing about Sandy going to 20th Century Fox, because, let me say this, Harold said, you take a lot of shit, to use the word, from Sandy to get Sandy is taking, is that?
I would imagine that's true. Again, on that level, with people who would be considered to be Mr. Meisner's peers at the time, obviously different from us, And I could see as an adult and having to deal with him how it could be, it could be frustrating. And for that whole period, and of course that was before, you know, obviously I got here and Mr. Meisner was back a number of years. And you know, I remember when you know, he did go out to Hollywood, seeing him in, you know, a couple of those films, Story on Page One and Tender is the Night. And of course I put those two things together. And particularly I remember Story on Page One, his performance in that. Yes.
Tony Randall thought that was the best performance in a film. He said, if anybody wants to know how to act, go to see Story on Page
One. There you go.
Did he ever say anything about his family?
I have to say I never did.
He probably never did.
No, I never did, even as an aside or even in a conversation that I might have been around that he was having with somebody else, one of the other teachers. I can't say that I ever remember that.
Sandy used to use me as an example of how not to speak. I came from Brooklyn and was a tough kid. Stell Radler recommended me for Dead End, but Sandy kept me out of it. But I couldn't carry a tune, and Sandy used to use that. It was only later in my life, after I had gone through Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll tell you, and I was growing up, divorcing my wife, I went to analysis, and it was after I was through with that, I went to voice school, to singing school, and I found out I had a very nice voice with a long, good range, and I acted. I wanted to feel what it would be like to act on the stage. I had no idea. So a friend of mine was head of the acting department at a college where I lived. He said, I want you to be in a play. And I don't know. I can't be in a play. I don't know how to act. I can't remember why. He said, come down and read. So I went down and read, I forget the play, but it was a play about an actor, a guy who decides he wants to be an actor and his parents were against it and so forth. And I took the part of the father, and I read for the play, and I got the part, which scared the hell out of me. And the first time I went down for rehearsal, he did a very bad thing. He introduced me as Sandy Meisner's brother, and everybody prayed, and it made it so tough on me. Oh, was that tough? Because I didn't. I had to go on being active. But it was a great experience for me.
Sounds like.
And there's nothing to do with it. It's the first time I've said that, you know. But it is interesting. I wanted to be an actor. I think I could have been. But this past, I don't. It's not part of my vocabulary. Some people say that Sandy was a bitter, lonely, unhappy man, and over the years became more bitter. Did you find him to be a...
From my perspective, you know, going back to whether he was, you know, difficult and how he acted, I mean, those things I could see. However, I wouldn't know that about him. Just that I wouldn't know, and I certainly didn't sense that about him, because again, to me, he was the maestro. And not that I thought of, oh, he must have a wonderful, great life outside of teaching. That's all that he necessarily was to us. You know, not being one to share, hey, I had a terrible night last night, or I just have to tell you or the class that apart from my teaching here, I have nothing, or I'm not happy or what. You know, he never did that. He came and he was our teacher, and that was it.
Did you have a good childhood growing up? I'm deviating.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I think I did. I have three younger brothers, and it was a kind of situation where at that time we were pretty much raised by our mother. My father being in the restaurant business, he wasn't home a lot of the time, and we got along, my brothers and I, and we still basically live in the same area. And so I would say it certainly wasn't an unhappy childhood or an abused childhood, or I wasn't denied anything. Plenty of love from my mother.
Because most actors I know, this is not part of, you don't have this. I have the feeling, you know, it's from a misorientation of some kind. Mm-hmm. Early in their life, childhood, babyhood. I always have that feeling, and this is sometimes what they act.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are like that. But you know what, that reminds me of there are two types of people that are actors, either those that are extroverts and have to go out and show it, or those who are introverts and use it to show what they want to show. I'm probably much more of the latter. And as a matter of fact, going back to family, as I mentioned earlier, my family lived in Yonkers. I lived at home for the 2 years. Now, nobody did that. Everybody else, you know, lived in the city, and they looked at me kind of cross-eyed. How can you do that? I said, I'm comfortable. It's a relatively easy commute. I can do what I have to do, and so that's what I'm doing. So I was happy at home.
Did your father pay for the tuition?
That's it. That's it. Now, I don't know if I could have gone the next step, and I never thought about this. Hey, Dad, how about an apartment in the city? But that wasn't an issue.
I was told that Sandy loved teaching acting more than acting. And Tony said this, and other people said this, because of the adoration he got from students. He needed that adoration, and so did Strasberg. And you can't get that from fellow actors. Who cares? Do you believe that?
I believe it from the point of view. I think you frame it perfectly. If you're an actor on a job, people might like your performance and hear that, but they're performing also. So it, even if you're not felt to be in competition on the stage or in a film, it's you go your way, you know, I'll go mine. Plus, you know, just the nature of the acting beast, you know, the next time out, you might be in competition for something. Whereas the teacher-student relationship does give you a lot more opportunity for that type of, you know, quote-unquote adoration or respect, however you want to put it. And I think that, that makes a lot of sense, particularly going back to the way that he is, what he was trying to do, what his great innate ability and talent were. It all comes together as, I think, a total package.
Mm-hmm. One person, more than one person interviewed, said Sandy's bisexuality caused him conflicts and problems. Did you see any evidence of this?
Again, that goes back to perhaps being naive or not being real insightful. I never saw anything like that. It goes back to being lonely, unhappy. That would have been something that I probably, at that age, at my developmental stage, wouldn't ever thought of.
To me, I was never told. I don't give a damn what.
Sure.
You know, and when I knew Sandy was homicidal, it didn't make any difference to me. I would call up Jimmy, you know, his companion.
Right.
And Jimmy would say, "Who is this?" And I would say, "Christ sakes, Jimmy, it's your brother-in-law," you know, that kind of stuff. But my family never told me. He's never told me. And that was what bothered me. Not that Sandy was.
Not that he was, but that you weren't told.
I wasn't told.
Yeah.
And
I guess it comes back to, well, why wasn't I told? Did somebody
That's
think
right.
that I wouldn't love him or respect
Something.
Him? Then that's an insult toward him and toward me.
What else wasn't I told? Where was this? We had no communication. You, I think, had communication with your brothers as part of the family. Sandy and I and my sister, we never did.
Yeah.
And so we had a younger brother. Sandy said, "I never knew he died way before I was born."
Is that right?
But he was about a year or two older than Sandy.
Uh-huh.
And Sandy got sick when he was about 5 or 6. And they went to the Catskills so Sandy could get better. And there, my brother Jackie was given unpasteurized milk and died of tuberculosis.
Whoa.
That you get. And they blamed my brother for his death, saying, "If you weren't sick, we wouldn't have had..." That was with him his whole life. And
I'm
I
sure.
think he thought I might have been Jackie.
Wow.
Right, you know, so I had to fight that
sort. That's tough.
You can maybe... Anyhow, we'll go to Tony Rand. Because Tony only calls Sandy Mr. Marshall. I know two people now who didn't call Mr. Marshall. You and Tony Rand, who I admired. I always felt kindred to Tony because he was so abused by my brother. And he said... Sandy was his father's symbol, but a very cold father. And all Tony ever wanted from Sandy when he became successful was for Sandy to say, "You know, Tony, you're a good actor." He
never would.
Never got that. He wouldn't praise people very much, would he?
Oh, no. Not praise, no. That was, I'll tell you, a couple things come to my mind. There were people that he did speak about that he would criticize, you know, people who had successful careers, didn't think they were talented actors. I do remember that when he did say something in terms of an accolade, he mentioned Robert Duvall a number of times.
Yeah.
I think he was very, very fond of his acting, thought he was very talented.
Yeah.
And you talk about being frightened or scared or fearful. One of the times I was the most fearful was after doing an exercise, sitting there, and Mr. Meisner looking at me and saying, during your exercise, I looked to the other teachers here and I said, I think he's got something. I've choked, I froze up. And there was no expression, I must have gone just pale white. He said to me, I think you have talent. And I had, I don't know if he was trying to get a reaction out of me, but for him to say that, and to see all the faces in the class, and just jaws dropping, because he threw those compliments around like manhole covers.
Did he really?
Really. So that was, I do remember that to this day, and that really, I was shaking.
I could see that. Tony said he never could act in front of Sandy.
I believe it. Hey, before that, our class used to be at 1 o'clock, and if you knew you were going to work, or there was a chance that you were going to work, at least for me, I couldn't eat lunch. Mm-hmm. Forget it.
I know some people who went to the doctor to have shots.
No, it didn't go that far, but I certainly couldn't eat, and was shaken.
Hey, good company. What's her name? I forget. Paul Newman's wife, Joan
Woodward.
She did the same thing. She couldn't act. She couldn't get a spray. And she always used to sit at the back of the room to be close to the door. And I have some funny stories she tells, and I don't remember them. Do you have any anecdotes about Sandy that you can remember, something funny, sad?
Well, apart from what I had mentioned earlier about the interview and the one I just mentioned about class and started to shake when he told me that he thought that I had talent, I guess there are a few other things. In class, I had worked one time in an improvisation, and for some reason, I don't remember the circumstance, Mr. Meisner started to ask about people's education and schooling and this and that, and somebody in the class screamed out, well, Robert went to college, at which point he just turned slowly to the class and said, unfortunately, in his case, it didn't take. Though we had those kind of tete-a-tetes any number of times. Also, when we had productions and he was sitting down in the back of the theater directing, I would be his note-taker. Mm-hmm. So I had the opportunity to hear some of his classic quips about some of my classmates up there.
Do you remember any of them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, to about one person, he turned to me and said, boy, when we make a mistake, we really make a mistake. He said that. And then he would send me upstairs to his office to get a little libation for him.
Yeah, he was a good drinker.
Yeah, absolutely, and then I would bring it down and keep taking the notes. And another one about me, Martin Waldron was a speech teacher here at the time.
Who
a wonderful
it?
Man, Martin Waldron.
Yeah.
A tall, thin, gray hair, a very striking looking man, very good voice, good speech teacher. I was on stage, Mr. Waldron was on stage, and Mr. Meisner was back directing, and I think that maybe he had partaken a little bit at that point. And Mr. Meisner screamed out, can't you enunciate any better? At which point, Mr. Waldron kind of yelled back at him, Mr. Meisner, he's enunciating quite properly. And now the two of them are looking at each other, and I'm feeling, about 2 inches big. And Mr. Meisner said, oh, I'm sorry. I forgot who I was talking about. Mr. Waldron kind of liked me. So a number of those kinds of situations. And personally, because I had a car, there were times when I'd drive him around from here to there on an errand or home. So I had a little bit of personal interaction with him. At times like that, again, going back, not that he would express anything to the extent where I think he was lonely or depressed or anything, but outside of here, outside of his role as a teacher, he could tend to be kind of really ornery and impatient and kind of picky about the types of things that would bother him. Every little thing seemed to bother him under certain circumstances, and he'd complain, but hey, it was just part of the way he was.
But he would just pick, like, what kind of things would bother him?
Oh, anything. If I didn't pull over to the curb here and I pulled over to the curb there, why didn't you pull over there? Or, can't you get any closer? That kind of thing. Or what's with all this traffic? Can't we go any faster? Things like that.
He used to do that to me. He'd come home to Brooklyn, and I would drive him. He had a performance, and he would get mad at me if I stopped for red lights. But Sandy, if there's one thing that Sandy left you, thing, what would it be?
Pride that I was able to be here and study with him. Mm-hmm. That to me, for people who know, when I say that, that is like, to compare it to somebody who was a career officer in the military, served valiantly, and was commended by his country. To me, the fact that I was at Neighborhood Playhouse and I studied with Sanford Meisner, and he taught me what he could teach me, and he accepted me and wanted me here, that just fills me with pride every time I think of it.
I think he liked you. If there's one thing you could have changed about Sanford, what would that be?
Well, from my point of view, again, at the time, to how to express it, to maybe lighten up a little bit, mm-hmm. but he could, that wouldn't be him. Yeah, if he did, it would not have been him. I wouldn't say not take things so seriously, but to be a little bit more, I don't even want to say friendly, how to express it. When I say lighten up, I really can't express it, Bob, any better than that. If he would have, but that wasn't him. That wouldn't have been him to lighten up and be a little bit, not more one of the students, but kind of like some of the younger teachers, Fred Karaman, Bill Esper, Bill Alderson. I mean, they didn't approach us the same way. But because of who he was and what he was, even if he wanted to, he couldn't. This was his role. But that's what I would have liked for him to be, a little bit lighter, but couldn't happen.
Carol said Sandy would walk into a class, very neatly, lower his chin and looks down.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? Now you talk about it, I can just see. It wasn't so much that he would walk in, he would kind of glide in.
Make an entrance. His,
exactly. Make an entrance. Like his feet were moving, but it was like he was just, on a cart or rollers. He was just coming in, and he'd look around, make an expression, maybe something to get a reaction, take a puff on his cigarette as he was walking in, and then just as a king coming to his throne, take his seat, and then everybody could start to breathe again.
Why do you think he did that?
Two things, because I think it was him, his personality, and going back to what you're talking about, the adoration, this was his role as the teacher, the maestro. He was the maestro, as if he was the conductor. And he was conducting, and everything would take place the way he wanted it to, the way it should. And when it didn't, that's when he would get frustrated. But at the same time, going back, he could tell you what you were doing wrong, so the next time when he started to conduct, hopefully you'd be more up to his standards.
It's been a beautiful interview.
Oh, this is great.
And now I'm going to ask you one last question.
Sure.
Is there something you can tell me that would help me better understand Mr. Meisner?
Oh, wow. I don't know that there is, because we covered so much. And in this whole process, apart from the fact that you didn't have great communication until later, because you were personally involved with him, I'm sure that you know obviously a lot more than I do. The only thing that I could say is, after all is said and done, no matter what he was, not to say cliche, I mean, he's definitely somebody who is to be admired and loved. I mean, from the point of view that I knew him, I feel, again, prideful and proud and just privileged to have studied with him. And that's only happened to me maybe a couple times in my life that I would have been associated with someone at his level. And that being the case, a good man who wanted to do something, had this burning desire, knew what he wanted to do, was great at it, that he deserves to be, to be loved. That's all I can say in that regard.
End of interview.